The Jen, Gabe, and Chewy podcast is sponsored by Celsius Energy Drink, and I am here to tell you it makes a huge difference in my mornings. With a unique blend of essential energy and key vitamins, Celsius is your partner to an active lifestyle. My favorite, the peach vibe. Learn more at Celsius.com and pick up Celsius Energy Drinks today.
Showtime. The right way to start your day. This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Jet sweep, Anderson. Broke one, got a terrific block down there from Jefferson. It's a touchdown for the Vikings. Love and leaping catch, touchdown. Jaden Reed beating Byron Murphy. And the Packers are finally on the board. 37-yard field goal is away. Oh, it hits the upright. No good. Outside they go to Kraft. The tight end got by Smith to the goal line. Touchdown. Leighton Narveson will try a 49-yard field goal. There is wind, and the kick is no good. He's missed two. Luck, 372 through the air. Look out, Van Ginkle to the end zone. Caught. Touchdown. Ricks. Love is fourth touchdown pass today.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studios at The Avenue with Gabe Neitzel and Mark Chamora. Here's Jen Lattis.
In a shocking development, guys, NFL games are 60 minutes long. I know. It's news to the Packers, who chose to play about 28 yesterday when they lost to the Vikings. I'm not worried, though. Again, I said I thought I would feel worse the way the game was trending at half. I was like, oh, God, I'm just going to be beside myself, despondent, angry, frustrated, because they looked totally inept in the first half. Mistakes, interceptions, the balls that he was throwing low, not being able to get the Vikings off the field on third down, all of it. But there was something about the way that they persevered. There was something about the way that they adjusted. There was something about the way that they figured some things out and looked better in the second half that allowed me to pressure release. Okay, it wasn't great. You lost a division game. Probably should have won. But I don't feel as bad as I thought I would feel. That being said, what the hell happened yesterday when Matt LaFleur was trying to call timeout in the second quarter and it looked like the official looked right at him as he was calling timeout, and then it looked like the official ignored him, and then LaFleur gets an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty for getting angry that his timeout call was ignored? Like that was a bizarre turn of events. Let's hear what Matt LaFleur had to say about how that all shook out.
Did you get an explanation as to why they didn't apparently hear you or react when you were trying to call the timeout? You could see on the replay calling it, and did Vinovich acknowledge that while you might
have... too demonstrative, so... I mean, because I didn't like cuss at the official or anything like that, but he said I was too demonstrative, so that's what he called.
What about your frustration, your demonstrative reaction was based on the line judge not responding?
Yeah, to you. I don't want to get into that. Like, I don't know. I was trying to call timeout. I didn't think they saw me. So it is what it is. They made the call.
Gabe, what was your reaction to that bizarre turn of events?
I mean, he can't be storming out of the field like that, I guess. You know, if you want to get the timeout, usually you see it so many times where coaches come sprinting down the sideline to get
the
attention.
As they discussed on the broadcast.
Sprinting down the sideline to get the attention of the line judge instead of sprinting onto the field the way that Matt LaFleur did. But I understand being an official is a tough job, but come on, man. Like, looked like you looked right at him. Like, there was an angle where it looked... like the line judge looks over, sees Matt LaFleur, who's got his hands up in the air, you know, making the T that everybody does, trying to call timeout, and then just, no, I'm going to look back at the play. What are we doing here?
It did feel a little bit representative of the day, didn't it, Joshy? It did feel like, or at least the half, because it was in the second quarter, I believe. It felt representative of the way the game had gone. Like, why would you expect that to go your way? Nothing else has gone your way.
Yeah, the fact that they said it was just too demonstrative and he was too mean to them. He didn't curse, but demonstrative is like, well, get a grip. This is a big boy league. You guys are paid a lot of money to be out there, and you're paid a lot of money, frankly, to not even be all that accurate that often. You can get away with not being making the correct calls sometimes. So, you don't want 15 yards. And in the end, it didn't end up actually hurting the Packers because they scored. But, like, that to me is just simply, like, what's that line judge doing if he's not hearing and seeing Matt LaFleur sprint? Was he just running down there because he wanted to hang out with them? Like, what else would he be doing? You're not allowed down there unless you're calling a timeout. Mm-hmm. So if you see the guy out of the corner of your vision,
you're saying the default setting should be right. He must be calling a timeout.
Why is he down here? Yeah, he's down here for a reason.
Let's use our deductive reasonings as an official. Why would this coach be down here? I'll probably just curse you. No! He wants to get your attention for a timeout. God, that was just a weirdly officiated game between all the catches and the interception that stood and it was just strange game from that quarter.
So how did that shake out for you? You thought the one that was deemed not a catch was a catch, and you thought that the other one that was deemed a catch was not a catch? Like, how did it shake out for you?
I thought all of them should have been catches. Because to me, you caught the ball. But then based on how the first three went, I thought there was no way the Xavier McKinney interception was standing. Because by the time he actually controlled it, he was out of bounds.
The thing that frustrates me about the Wicks ruled incompletion, the guy who ruled it incomplete had no chance of actually seeing if it was or was not. He was behind the play. And the call, you needed to be in front of it to get a good sight of it. So he ruled incompletion without knowing for sure it was.
Mm-hmm.
He just went, well, it looked pretty low. He probably didn't get his hand under it, which was not the case. And then that's where you have the burden of irrefutable proof to overturn a call. So they double screwed up on that. I thought we were at a place where the NFL kind of decided we don't need 100% security all the way through. Like, there can be a little movement as long as you have a hand attached to it. And that seemed to have gone out the window yesterday. They needed 100% no budging of the ball for it to be ruled a catch.
Except for the Xavier McKinney interception.
With the ball, while he was out of bounds, was still in the air.
Correct.
Which, it was like we kind of screwed you to have this one.
800-990-3776, regarding Matt LaFleur getting the unsportsmanlike conduct, lots of folks weighing in. Dave and Aaron saying, I liked angry LaFleur, showed some heat. Meanwhile, Justin saying, I loved seeing Matt get all fired up. He's usually so tame. It was nice to see him like that. Seemed like the team might have responded to that a bit too. Would you buy that, Gabe?
No.
That him getting fired up was like, oh, maybe we should also get fired up.
No, I especially in professional football, like, hearing Chewy talk, the mentality that you have to go out there, I don't think there's just a switch you flip in terms of the mentality. You know, I mean, they were already moving the ball at that point. They were inside the red zone. They end up punching it in the next play or the play after, you know, LaFleur gets the penalty. I rarely buy into, hey, this team's now going to get fired up because their coach just got a 15-yard penalty in football specifically.
I think we all never want to blame officiating, but I don't think we can ignore how the outcome of that first half would have changed had some of those calls gone the Packers'
sure.
ways. Like, extended drives there would have done a lot for, mm-hmm. I think, the defense and for the offense to get some confidence and Jordan to get some confidence. Like, that Romeo Doubs one not being a catch, which I think was probably the closest one to where I would have the least problem, but as it continued to cascade, it became a bigger issue. Like, we talked about it, like, with the Badgers game. You have to understand the, like, texture and context of a game. And the way those ended up having to be punts and giving them right back the ball to which they scored, I think set the Packers behind in a way that would have probably been a lot different had they gone the way we all wanted.
So Gabe keeps saying that he is encouraged by the offense, that what he saw yesterday, maybe it was just the life they showed in the second half that reminded him this could be a very good offense in the league. Gabe, if you had to rate the offense right now in the National Football League, are they a top 10 offense in the league right now?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
By season's end, can they be a top 5 offense in the league?
I think statistically they're a top 5 offense right now. In terms of their yards and points, I think they might be up there right now because, I mean, you get 29 points. That's a lot of points in an NFL game in the first, you know, in the first quarter of the season in 2024. They racked up the yards.
They smashed the over, huh?
Uh-huh.
They absolutely destroyed the, what was it, 40, the 44? Oh, crap, I don't remember, but it was in the 40s.
They combined for 60, so they sprinted past it. But you saw in that second half, yes, Jordan still made some bad decisions, but, I mean, Wicks had some drops where he was pretty open. Like, Tucker Kraft fumbled the football trying to make a play, but there were guys really open in that second half. And then when you pair that with the way they've been able to run the football in the first handful of weeks, I think you get a game plan going and you get this offense clicking early. We can balance that a little bit more because Jordan throwing the ball 54 times is not ideal. I think that this offense is really going to be cooking. I do not have any issues right now with this offense.
I think it's extremely encouraging. The amount, remember we were just talking about the lack of explosive plays and big plays for like the league as a whole. The Packers seem to be reeling off multiples per game with different quarterbacks at this. Like, guys are open and they're open deep, which if you watched some of the teams were used to doing that, that's been a real problem for almost everyone.
But that's scheme thing, right?
It's scheme, and it's also like talent. Like, some of those guys are just hard for other people to. Jaden Reed is taking shorter catches, and he's like also playing bigger than his size with like jump balls. It's a multifaceted thing where I think that's going to translate and be a huge asset moving forward.
Yeah, this offense is, again, do I think that Jordan Love's going to clean up the interceptions? Yeah, I would be floored if he has another 3 interception game. Absolutely floored. Like, I can't imagine that happening again. I think he's going to just continue to get better as he gets more comfortable with the knee, as the knee continues to get better. You saw how accurate he kind of figured it out in the second half. Again, outside of the just boneheaded decision to just chuck one up when Harrison Smith was, you know, barreling down on him as a free blitzer, and he just decided to chuck one up there. He was really good in the second half, and that's the Jordan Love that I think we're getting for the rest of the year.
So I think it's easy for us to say that the issues that they had in the first half were, it's easy to chalk them up to Jordan just being rusty, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because it's not like Matt LaFleur was like, we're going to do a crap game plan. We're going to do a crap game plan in the first half, and then we're going to do a good game plan in the second half. Not crap. It was just as simple as, hey, the plays were there to be made,
yeah,
and Jordan was unable to make the plays.
Yeah, there were just some low throws. There were some throws off the mark where he just didn't
see. Which, by the way, if Jordan is hitting the guys in the numbers on those, then we're not having the conversation of, was it a catch? Was it not a catch?
Correct.
The ground, of, you know, hit the ball and all the things that we saw numerous times.
Yeah, but the defense was still an issue because it was way too easy for the Vikings in the first half.
Okay, an issue enough that you think it is going to keep them from being a championship level team?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. The best teams in this league generate pressure with 4. They don't have to blitz all the time.
So what would your solution to that be? Because it can't just be better.
I don't know if there is a solution. If Rashawn Gary could be better, do we think he'd have more than 1 sack over the last 11 games? Maybe the knee injury robbed him of more athleticism than we want to admit. It's certainly a possibility. At this point, because we're more than a year removed, he got that grant, he got that pass last year, even though he started off great. You know, he had a couple of 3 sack games early, but didn't have a sack in the month of December or January last year. Doesn't have a sack has 1 sack in the month of September this year. But he's the one that's getting paid all this money, and he's got to step up, and he has to make those plays.
All right, let's go Seinfeld scale for you on that. Let's go Seinfeld scale on the defense. You're clearly not yada, yada, yada.
Correct.
Are you stressed. A little stressed?
I'm stressed.
But you're not freaking out. Why are you not freaking out?
Because
you're not
Xavier McKinney's really good.
Yes, but he's playing all the way back.
But he can make enough big plays. He can make enough big plays, I think, and get everybody lined up. And between him and Jeff Hafley, I think that this defense can be competent enough where they're going to put together a good record. I just have questions about when they play a good offense like this Minnesota Viking offense is. And I know, you
that
know,
can threaten you and hurt you with the run and the pass.
Yes. That's when it becomes difficult.
800-990-3776. Let's go out to the phone lines. Paul waiting online to talk about the front 7. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
Doing great, man.
What I was thinking is we have a front 7 who's been coached by Joe Barry, who had a certain style for multiple years, and it doesn't instantly switch in your head, oh, I have to do it completely different from how I've been trained. And I think if we give the defense just a little bit more time to adapt to that style, we might see some more. I'm not saying they're going to be great, but I think they're going to be better.
I sure, when it comes to like scheming stuff up, but when it comes to a pass rush, don't you think it's just Rashawn Gary versus their tackle? Like, I think that's just, you know, If there was a pass rush move that Rashawn Gary was doing, and it was successful under Joe Barry, like, he's not going to get a new coaching staff and go, yeah, don't do that pass rush move. You know what I'm saying?
No, I know exactly what you're saying. And there's different pass rush moves for different events and different types of setups. Like, you know, and even getting beyond, I'm going to bull rush, I'm going to spin. I mean, there's big arm, short arm to twist the guy. There's how to rip through and swim. And if your gap control is the number one, you kind of put some of those ideas in the back burner a bit.
But these last 2 weeks, it's not gap control. I understand the gap control. You can talk me into that verse with the rushing quarterbacks, right? Mm-hmm. With the two guys the first couple of weeks, with what you saw from
Jalen Hurts. And you saw the issues with Quay Walker there.
Yeah, yeah. So you could talk me into it. But Sam Darnold's, I mean, he's athletic. He's not a running quarterback. He can get you a couple of yards out of the pocket when he needs to. But if this idea is, the idea we were told by Jeff Hafley was, we're going to stop the run on our way to the quarterback. So I don't know how much, you know, especially in obvious passing situations, you're worried about gap control. You're just worried about getting after the quarterback.
Pass rushing is kind of just pass rushing.
Yeah.
The whole thing was you're just going to get after the quarterback.
Well, but to Paul's point, I want to make sure that, you know, again, this cannot be our in case of emergency break glass excuse for everything. But I do feel like in the first quarter of the season, you can still lean on no preseason. When these guys are trying to learn a new defensive scheme, and I understand what you're saying, that the pass rush should be more simplistic than, you know, all of those complicated things that you see with the Zach Galifianakis gif, right? It's not like that. That, to me, is part of the reason why I may be willing to give them a little more of a leash to continue learning.
I just look at pass rush the same way I look at a nine route for Christian Watson. Hey, Christian, just run down the field and get open. Like, that's not coaching. That's just, this guy's faster than you, you know? Like, that's the way and that's a simplistic way, but for the most part, yeah, every once in a while you can stunt, you can blitz, you can do these things, but pass rush comes down to the individual player. And right now, through four games, they have done every single one of them to a man is below average in terms of getting pressures.
And you don't think any of that is switching the defensive scheme and not having a preseason? You think it is a lack of talent?
Correct. The more and more I see it, the more and more it looks like a lack of talent.
Is there anything they could do to convince you otherwise?
You know, actually get sacks against good teams? Rashawn Gary, show up? Like, have we noticed outside of the one sack that he had, what's Rashawn Gary done? Has he really showed up? Is he really kind of making those big plays? Has he showed up the way he did pre-injury?
I've seen him lose the edge a few times.
Okay, that's not good. It's not good.
Most notably on a touchdown to Jordan Addison.
You know, hey, you know, that's, I guess he's showing up. I guess you're noticing him, not for the right reasons, but, and Lucas Van Ness hasn't really shown much growth. Again, the only one in that front four that's really showed out was Devontae Wyatt, and now he's injured.
I'd be interested to see if we're going to start seeing more Enigbare. He's put a guy on skates last time, and he's actually a plus run defender there on the edge as well. At some point, even though you paid Rashawn Gary, you're not going to ever just remove him from the field, but there's going to be lost snaps there. There's going to be other options. Like, at this point, it's you need Enigbare or Van Ness to emerge, or you have to go out and get someone else to supplement.
And to the point that Gabe made earlier in that Acme Packing Company article that you referenced, Gabe, the Packers group of four defensive ends have mustered just 26 pressures. That's 11 below the league average through the 4 weeks.
Cool.
Just trying to give more context to support your point.
Yeah, I don't know if we needed that, John. I thought we kind of hammered it home.
She just wanted to make sure. Yeah.
You don't feel like that was...
She kind of tap danced on the whole thing there.
You don't feel like that was valuable information?
No, certainly like it was.
If, no, look, strengthened Gabe's
don't
argument.
Don't get me wrong. Very valuable information. I don't know if it was necessary information.
I didn't want to hear it. How about that?
I'm picking up on that. 800-990-3776. We are asking you all morning long, what is the thing that frustrated you the most? We have got a lot of responses about the kicker. Certainly a lot about Jordan Love being out there. There are a lot of people on the ESPN Milwaukee talk and text line who say the Packers made a mistake by trotting their franchise quarterback out there to play against the Vikings. We will dive into that when we return on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. For your next night out, make Aria, the acclaimed restaurant inside St. Kate the Arts Hotel, your dinner destination. It's nestled on the second floor of St. Kate. It's an artful dining experience that captivates with culinary creativity. every single bite is a work of culinary art. Learn more and make reservations at aria@stkate.com. That's aria@stkate.com.
It's Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Josh said it's garbage.
I'm so glad that Josh is getting a front row seat.
He said it's it doesn't work.
Chewy,
am I right or wrong?
We call that a setup in the biz.
On 94.5 ESPN.
Smith with the blitz. Love going deep. Intercepted by Murphy. Intercepted, the third interception of Jordan Love today. Byron Murphy comes up with his first pick of the season. And the drive stops like that for Green Bay.
We have Rob Domofsky coming up very shortly here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. But again, the reaction was a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking happening after that game, saying that Jordan Love should not have been out there at all. It was obvious in the first half that he was labored, that he was struggling, that he was not confident in that left knee. And if you knew that that was the case, why not continue going with what was working, which was Malik Willis, or at the very least, Dave from Aaron says, I don't think they made a mistake putting Love out there, but I am surprised that they didn't have a package for Willis. He could have been a weapon in that game. Gabe, do you agree? Is there any part of you that thinks that Jordan Love shouldn't have been out there at all, or that at the very least have a package for Malik Willis that could have maybe kept the defense on its heels a little bit?
The only way you're having a package for Malik Willis is if he's the guy getting the ball on a jet sweep. You don't go out, decide that this guy's your franchise quarterback, and then take him out of games to put somebody else in at quarterback. You just don't do that. That's not the way any of this works. I know it would be fun to see some of the read option stuff with Malik, and I know it worked in the end zone against the Tennessee Titans a couple of weeks ago. But if Jordan Love is the guy you think he is, and the Packers believe he's that guy, otherwise they don't pay him $55 million a year, you don't take that guy off the field because he's going to be, you saw why. He's a big difference maker throwing the football. Those are the guys that make the biggest impact in the NFL, and I do not expect them to have any sort of package. Again, unless Malik Willis is on the field at the same time of Jordan Love, and he's the guy getting the jet sweep, I don't expect the Packers to have any sort of Malik Willis package.
Do you have any issue with him being out there?
No.
Jordan?
No. He wanted to be out there. Like if he, and Chewy talked about this last week, like the process is the player fighting to get cleared, the player feeling good enough to play, the doctor clearing him. It's kind of a joint decision. And when he feels good enough to be out there, the only way to kind of get over some of that, as we saw, was maybe to take that hit. And he's not going to get hit in practice. There were always going to be a little bit of a bump for him before he starts feeling good to come back. And that was going to be true if he was out there yesterday or if he was going to be out there 6 weeks from now. That was always going to happen. So I'm glad that we have now that half behind us. He knows what he has to do to get ready to play on that knee every week, knows what he has to do to be effective playing on that knee, and hopefully the knee just continues to get better as the season progresses and we get the second half of Jordan Love from yesterday's game as we go forward.
Ray agrees with you on the YouTube page. Remember, you can always stream the show on our ESPN Milwaukee YouTube page. No matter when Jordan Love's first game back was, he was going to be testing the injury. It was not a mistake to play him. He would be shaky the first game back, no matter when that first game was. And then Money Mike weighs in saying, Malik Willis is not beating the Vikings. So many flags give Love credit for the comeback. They clean up those mistakes or make those kicks. They win that game with Love. Joshy, do you agree it was the right choice to have Jordan Love out there versus the Vikings?
Yeah, absolutely. If you're healthy enough to play, you're healthy enough to play. It's as simple as that. As we saw, it didn't take a long time for the Vikings to put a whole lot of points on the board. Malik Willis, as grateful for what he did as I am, and for as impressed with his performance as I was, he's not coming back from 28-0. There's very few quarterbacks in the league who are capable of it. The Packers just so happen to have one of that handful right now. People keep mentioning the have a package for... Do we take the New Orleans Saints as like serious Super Bowl contenders? Have they been one of the top teams? Because everyone mentions Taysom Hill and what they do there. And sure, yeah, he scores a few touchdowns, but that's not a serious franchise. That's not a Super Bowl contender year in and year out. They're doing that because frankly, they don't have the talent at quarterback or elsewhere on the field to score any other way. So they have to kind of trick everyone. They're running the annexation of Puerto Rico four different ways with Taysom Hill. That's not what you want. You want your quarterback out there throwing deep passes to Dontavian Wicks and Jayden Reed and Tucker Kraft, because that's how you score points, and that's how you consistently remain one of the better offenses in the league.
When the Wildcat was a thing in the NFL in like the late 2000s, early 2010s, Packers didn't do any of that.
No.
They had Brett Favre, and then they had Aaron Rodgers.
The hell do I want them off the field for?
Yeah, the Patriots didn't do it. Broncos didn't do it. The Saints at that point didn't do it.
Right.
Because you've got one of those difference-making quarterbacks. You don't want to take those guys off the field.
We got to take a break and get to Rob Domofsky, who is going to join the show very shortly. But I was interested in the fact that when I checked out the box score, guys, nobody went up over 100 for the Vikings. Is that a depth thing? They just have so many weapons that they can spread the ball around. It's kind of like what we have talked about with the Green Bay Packers of, like, you might not have a 100-yard receiver, but you're going to have five guys with 70.
Sam Darnold didn't get the Aaron Rodgers thing that we always saw with eight completions to eight different, but that's what happened. He was spreading the ball around really early, and Sam Darnold has a ways to go before he's compared to Aaron Rodgers, but that was something that was celebrated often. It felt like every other week it was like Aaron Rodgers has completed a pass to nine different guys on this team. They did have a plan for Justin Jefferson. He did get open, but you saw them shading a lot to give help over the top. And he still made incredible plays with them having a serious plan for him. It was
21-0. He had one catch for 5 yards.
Yeah. It's just, Jordan Addison's really good too. Aaron Jones is really good too. Mm-hmm. They've got options.
We had talked about the number
they
for
don't
Aaron
even have
Jones.
TJ Hockenson yet.
And he only had 93 yards rushing. He had 46 in the passing game as well. Mm-hmm. What was the number that we threw out there?
I think 120.
Was the number
was
we said.
Was the danger zone.
So he was over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got into the danger zone.
All right.
I mean, he didn't get to Chewy's 160. So I got that going
Kenny
for
Kenny Loggins over here. Yeah. Ode to Top Gun. We got to get to Rob Domofsky. He's coming up next on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. But before we do, guys, with competitive rates and tailored banking solutions, your money works harder for you when you bank at Great Midwest Bank. Join a community that values your growth and supports your journey. Wrap up your summer with a simple deposit at Great Midwest Bank and watch your savings grow larger and larger as the days grow shorter and shorter. Great Midwest Bank is where your financial goals go to become a reality. Visit GreatMidwestBank.com to see what products they have for you.
We need a new intro for this year, though.
All right, we'll work on it.
Consider it done, Rob.
ESPN's number one source for green and gold information.
Look, I would suspect that we don't see Malik Willis throw the ball down the field a whole lot, especially early, but it would not surprise me if we got back to more of the quick West Coast stuff.
Our most musically inclined and bald guest.
I was overly harsh about Gabe's golf game because I played terrible yesterday.
It's Rob Domofsky.
This better be a great segment.
On Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Always love talking to Rob Domofsky every Monday after a Packers game, win or lose. Fortunately, this comes after a loss. Good morning, Rob.
Gabe, how are you?
But I feel okay because they came back, but I also think there's still a lot of issues that were exposed yesterday. What do you think was the biggest issue the Packers had in their loss to the Vikings yesterday?
Man, what a weird game, wasn't it? There's... The biggest issue is hard to come up with because I have so many issues that were, maybe not any of them were like, oh, the season's over because of this.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a lot of like contributing factors. I mean, we could boil it down to simply the kicker. They lost the game by 2 points and he missed 2 field goals, right? I mean, that's the very simplistic approach. And we can get into what the heck they're going to do there more if we want to.
Don't worry. We will, Rob. Don't worry.
There's a couple of things, too. I mean, like, I think I heard you guys talking about pass rush and pressure. Do you know how many passes that Sam Darnold completed outside the pocket yesterday?
Sam Darnold outside the pocket. Okay. All right. I was going to. So one of his 20 was outside the pocket.
Yeah. He didn't have to move. Like, that's a problem. The Packers are last. I just looked this up. They're last in ESPN's pass rush win rate. Statistic. Okay.
Josh, it's getting worse. It's getting worse.
The Josh Jacobs was supposed to be the workhorse back thing confuses me a little bit because it seemed like the last couple 2 weeks it's been like more of an even split between him and Emmanuel Wilson. So, you know, there's that issue. You know, I'm willing to give Jordan Love a little bit of a pass for his first half because, look, he was going to be rusty. He was going to be inaccurate. I think he had to figure – it took him a while to figure out how much he could push off and use that left leg as a, you know, as a plant and all that. You know, I think that's – you know, he sort of looked like the Jordan Love of early last year where he was low on a lot of throws and a little bit late getting the ball to people. But I thought that got better, obviously, as the game went on. So I'm willing to give him a little bit of a pass there. But and all those other things, I'm sure there's ones that I haven't even mentioned that you've thought of that are minor to medium issues on this team right now.
Yeah, I mean, penalties certainly an issue for this team. They're top five right now in penalties. That's something. But going to the pass rush. Because to me, and maybe I'm wrong on this, you know, we don't have Chewy here to correct me if I'm wrong on this. I feel like pass rush, that's not necessarily scheme dependent. Yes, you can do things blitzing wise. You can, you know, with just your front four, if you want to rush four, you can do stunts. But like Rashawn Gary not being able to get home right now, I don't look at that as, oh, they're transitioning to the new scheme, so give him time. Like, I just, is it possible the knee injury robbed him of some athleticism that we weren't going to factor in?
Sure, that's definitely possible, but I do think there is, and it may not be scheme necessarily, Gabe, but I do think that there are techniques that different coaches teach for how they want the pass rushers to operate. You know, some want a hand placement here, some want a first step this way, some want it the other way. You know, some want you to set up an offensive lineman with this kind of move or that kind of move at the beginning. So, I mean, while I get it there that it's not necessarily scheme dependent, there are techniques within a scheme that differ from coordinator to coordinator and from system to system. So there still could be some of that adjustment happening with the pass rush.
So what, they can go from below average to average? Like, I mean, either way, it's largely concerning no matter what. Yep. I mean, there are a lot of things. I saw Andy Herman said, you know, and again, just pointing this out, one sack for Rashawn Gary in the last 11 games. You mentioned that the win rate in terms of ESPN, NFL Next Gen Stats has a pressure rate where the Packers' best one is Rashawn Gary, but the number is still below average. I don't know how they get better at this, Rob.
Yeah, I mean the old days when they couldn't get pressure, Leroy Butler in his playing days would just tell Fritz Schirmer, "Let's blitz more," and they would blitz more. So maybe that's going to have to be the way they get it temporarily. It's just to send more guys,
and that worked yesterday. Obviously, they got the sack from Quay, got the strip sack from Keyshawn. It seems like that halfway knows when to send that. So let's go ahead and talk about the kicker then. All right, we've solved the issue of the defense, pass rush. Okay, we blitz more. How do we solve the issue of Narvison making and missing kicks?
Well, it sure sounds like they're sticking with him. At least that's what Matt LaFleur indicated.
Okay, does he actually have confidence though? This is the same guy who said he was praying, you know, last year when Carlson was going out there.
I think his comment yesterday was a direct lesson learned from the praying comment from last season, but before the 49ers game, if I'm not mistaken, he made that comment. Yeah, I mean, he's learned his lesson there. We'll see if he learns his lesson about jumping up and down on the sidelines when the referee won't give him a timeout, but that's another topic that we could get into. But look, the problem is, and Bill Huber, who does a great job covering the Packers for SI.com, he laid out who the kickers are that are available, the guys who have kicked in the league. You know, not necessarily guys that have, you know, gone to camp, like rookies that have gone to camp and have never kicked. But here's I'll just read Bill's list real quick.
Is this going to make me feel bad?
Yes. Well, it's not going to make you feel any better. Randy Bullock, Riley Patterson, Brett Maher, Chad Ryland, who I've never heard of, Matthew Wright, and Anders Carlson. Those are the veteran kickers, the guys who have actually kicked for at least a season with a team in the league. So, you know, those are the guys that are, I mean, I guess you could throw Mason Crosby in there, but that's not happening either. There are a bunch of guys that are on the tryout kicker circuit, you know, the rookies, the second year guys who have yet to kick in the league. And there's every week, you know, there's these guys make the circuit to try out. And I guarantee you at minimum, they will work out some guys this week.
Do you expect Braden Arvidsson to still be the kicker on Sunday against the Rams?
Yes, except here's one thing I thought of that maybe, I don't know if a way out or an option is. Let's just say they really, really think Braden Arvidsson has the talent to be their long-term kicker, but right now he needs to fix something. And the interesting thing is, how many has he missed? Four? Yeah. All four of them, plus the one that didn't count, so really five, have all been missed wide right, all of them. So maybe they feel like, you know, it's better than my two-way miss where I have no idea whether I'm going to hit a hook or a fade off the tee. That's a problem.
Typically, but, yes.
But the fact that it's only a one-way miss, you know, maybe they think it's fixable. And here's, just hear me out on this for a second.
Okay.
Maybe, just maybe, you know, they take a week off with him and they give Alex Hale a shot. Alex Hale's their practice squad kicker, Australian kid, who really, when he got here in training camp, wasn't great. But last week, Rich Bisaccia actually mentioned how, I'm pretty sure if I remember right, it was unprompted. He brought up how Alex Hale has improved, you know, over the last 5-6 weeks since camp ended. So I don't know, maybe that's an option, that they sit in Arvidsson for a week, let him, you know, sort of go back to work on his technique and try Alex Hale. I mean, that seems far-fetched and unlikely, but is that any worse option than those 6-7 names I just read off?
I don't think so. I don't think that's any worse. Joshy?
Rob, has Rich Bisaccia delivered on what he was expected to do when the Packers hired him?
Boy, that is a $2 million question, Josh, because I think that's what they're paying him, at least $2 million. I don't know. And here's the thing. I can't remember if we talked about this on the show right after the Brazil game or not, but or maybe it was even before that. I talked to a former kicker in the league who said that, look, Rich is probably a really good special teams coach in terms of scheme, blocking, motivation, all that stuff. But what does he know, or what does any special teams coach know about kicking? Like, kicking is so different than the rest of special teams, you know, the other 10 guys on the field that, and I actually asked Rich this a couple weeks ago of why teams don't hire kicking specialists. And his answer was, well, these guys all have kicking specialists that they work with in the offseason. And that is 100% true.
Sure, but every quarterback has a guy that they work with, and Tom Clemens still has a job.
And the other thing too is there's offensive coordinators and then there's quarterbacks coaches. Why can't there be special teams coaches and kicking coaches? I really think that could, I mean, they've got 8 million coaches in the thing anyway. I mean, remember way back when they used to have like, yeah, exactly. They used to have like 8 or 9 coaches in the whole staff, and now they've got 30. So yeah, why not have a kicking guy? Now the argument is like a guy like John Carney or Jamie Cool, who those are these kicking gurus. They work with 30 kickers. So if one team hired them, you know, their kicking business of working with all these guys and developing kickers from high school and college might go away. And maybe it would for them. They wouldn't want to do it, but I don't see why you wouldn't at least try to bring in on staff a kicking coach, kicking specialist.
Yeah, I think that makes all the sense in the world. So let's go back to the Josh Jacobs thing, because I didn't even think about that. I was thinking about it in the first half when, why is Emmanuel Wilson still getting these carries? And then, you know, I got lost in the game of them frantically trying to come back. Is that something you guys plan on asking LaFleur this week of why Josh Jacobs and Emmanuel Wilson are splitting snaps and splitting carries? Because, again, Jacobs was much more efficient.
Yeah, so he was asked it yesterday, and I'm going to read you the answer. He said, I don't know what the exact snap counts were, so until I get back and take a peek at it, I don't know. And then the follow-up was basically, well, it looked like they were alternating series. And here's what I thought was really interesting. LaFleur said there were some things that happened early on with some of the protections that were a little bit of an issue that we need to clean up and be better in. And it became a passing game. I mean, we threw the ball 50 some times. So what does that tell you? That tells you that Josh Jacobs didn't like what was doing in pass protection early in that game. Now, there was also, I think it was the first or second series, Jacobs had, he came, and in fact, it might have been right after his first touch, came to the sideline, was getting looked at by the trainer. First they were looking at his hand, then they were looking at, I believe it was his right ankle. Now, he ended up going back in, But I wonder if that was an issue for him when it came to pass protection.
Speaking of injuries, Christian Watson, is that Syria? He was carted off the field. It seemed that LaFleur didn't seem very concerned about it after the game, though.
Yeah, I think it's a high ankle sprain from what I've been able to gather. Now, high ankle sprains can be anywhere from a week to 3 or 4 weeks. He did seem to be, moving okay. Devontae Wyatt actually seems like maybe it was worse. He was in a boot and on crutches, so that's the double whammy. He also had an ankle sprain. So I do think those are both. The X-rays on Watson, I know that were negative for sure, but sounds like high ankle sprain. And again, that's, it's hard to know. I mean, some guys can come back from that right away, and other guys need a couple of weeks. But my guess is that they would probably miss him for at least a game. Jason and I do, and Bill Huber do a Sunday night show on WBAY up here, and the host Chris Roth on our panel asked us last night, who can you afford to lose more, Watson or Wyatt? And honestly, the way Jaden Reed and the way they're throwing the ball, I would say you could probably lose Watson before you could lose Devontae Wyatt. And I would never have said that, a month ago, but Devontae Wyatt might be one of their best front four guys.
He's the one for me, Rob, that stood out more in the front four more than anybody else.
I agree 100%.
Would they ever consider taking the sticker off of Quay Walker?
I don't know about the sticker, but I wonder if they try to, if they find a way to just use him a little bit differently. Some guys just take longer to adapt to a scheme. Some guys aren't a fit for the position they're playing in the scheme. And I'm not going to pretend to know exactly the intricacies of the Will, the Sam, the Mike in this system, but I do wonder if maybe he's better off on one of the other two spots, and maybe play Adrian Cooper or play Tyron Hopper a little bit more or whatever. But that is to me the biggest maybe surprise or question about the transition for this defense, is that it doesn't seem right now like Quay Walker is, I don't know, playing loose is the right word, playing fast, or just playing like we thought he would play.
Yeah, I feel like Edgerrin Cooper stood out to me more when he's been on the field. And I mean, Xavier McKinney, to me, you can just have him be, the green dot, to have him be calling the plays and then figure out whatever you want to do at that linebacker position.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's got to be a guy who's on the field all the time, and Xavier McKinney is certainly that. So that would probably be the next best option. Would definitely be 29, and he sure seems like he can handle just about anything that they want to throw at him.
Rob, we always appreciate the time, bud, every single Monday. Thanks for giving us the latest up there in Green Bay.
All right, Gabe, we're going to have to figure this out next week with this whole West Coast time change in my flight. So I'm not good at time changes and airports and all that, so we'll have to figure it out.
You know what? Hey, but Josh is a smart guy. Like, I think we'll be able to figure it out, right?
We'll get to the bottom of it,
Rob. I don't even know what time my flight is yet. So.
Yeah, so we'll figure that out. We'll figure it out later in the week. But we appreciate it, Rob.
All right, guys. We'll be seeing you.
Rob Domofsky joins us each and every Monday after Packer games here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. The next best round of golf for you is going to be happening at the Wisconsin Club. Hey, do what I did. Become a member at the Wisconsin Club. No assessments, no food and beverage minimums, and a beautiful golf course that's fun, challenging. I love it. I love being out there. I love playing the golf course. I love, because I'm a golf nut, I love the practice facility. I can sneak out there, get some range time in. They've got a couple of different chipping greens that I can work on the short game as well. But maybe you're looking for something a little bit more. Well, Wisconsin Club is tennis, pickleball courts, pool with theme Sunday fun days each and every week. So what are you waiting for? Get started today. Visit WisconsinCountryClub.com for membership info. The Wisconsin Country Club, just a fairway away.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
You want more physical harm beset upon people who are trying to earn a living.
I want winners. If someone has to die in order for us to win, then that's the price you pay.
On 94.5 ESPN.
Here we go.
It doesn't matter what age you are. Low testosterone can be an issue with any guy. It's where Mentality comes in. Local healthcare facility specifically dedicated to helping men feel and perform at their very best. Look, I was kind of tired, groggy, just didn't have the energy that I used to. Thought it was, okay, getting a little older, waking up earlier in the day. It's just how it goes. But it doesn't have to be that way with Mentality. They've got my testosterone levels where they need to be. Now I've got the energy to do everything I need to do. Got to do this show. Got to do a show later today. Have the energy to attack and do it all. So go to LowTUSA.com. Mentality allows treatment to fit into every guy's lifestyle. Learn more about Mentality at LowTUSA.com. Did I make a mistake yesterday, Joshy? So doing Green Bay game day up at the Tundra Trio. And... you know, great time at the tailgate, and one of our salespeople, hey, I got a couple extra tickets. Nobody's going to use them. Do you want to use them? And I wasn't going to be sitting with him. I wouldn't be sitting with anyone that I knew. So ultimately decided that I was going to pass on them. And, you know, through the first half, I thought, thank God I passed on this. When the Packers had the ball looking like they were going to score down 9 with 6 minutes left, and this was still going to be an interesting game, thought, oh, maybe I should have gone. I feel like a younger version of me would have gone, yeah, I don't care where I'm going. I'll just go and sit. But like, I don't know. I feel like it, now that I'm older, it's like, well, do I really want to go to this game by myself? Honestly, if I had a pal there, like, I would have gone in instantly.
Right.
I just didn't want to go in and sit by myself.
The thing that makes it complicated for me is I don't know how much I stick around after the start of the game, thinking about traffic, getting home. I mean, you've got a wife and a dog at home.
Yeah.
There's stuff to do around the house. Like,
sure.
Even if you go in, how much do you think you stay to even see the point come with the game come within 2 points?
Oh, I would. I mean,
if you're there, you're there.
If I'm there, I'm there.
Yeah.
And so, I had texted my wife. She seemed okay with me staying for the game. If that would have been, you know.
We're also the exact wrong people to ask this type of questions, because most people would, any given chance, given a Packers ticket, go
100%.
In. And we've had the distinct privilege to be offered tickets regularly.
So the thing is, I have not attended a game as a fan since 2010.
Oh, wow.
At Lambeau.
Wow.
But again, very lighted games on the radio network, so I was up there for a bunch, you know, where I was doing the pregame, you know, have covered a number of different games. I was up there for, I mean, it was an unfortunate night because the Packers lost to the Bears on Thanksgiving, but it was when they retired Brett's number and they had Bart there, and, you know, that was a really cool halftime thing. Like, I've been fortunate enough to be there a ton with what we do, but I have not, like, sat in the stands, gotten a Miller Lite in my hand, yelling defense, you know, on a big third down.
The problem is if for me to have a full, great game experience, I need to be having some beers beforehand, and probably a shuttle ride back.
Yeah, the beers beforehand's not an option for me, Josh.
Right.
Kind of busy up until the kickoff.
I don't think you made that big of a mistake.
There's
also a mindset in those. Like, going to a Packers game isn't just like, oh, I'll stop over and just like catch the last couple innings of a baseball game. There's a lot goes into it.
Yeah, that's if I had a pal there, like if you were there, we would have gone.
Oh, absolutely.
Without a doubt. Will the Intouch continue to react to the Packers' loss? Coming up next.